Welcome back to the New Books in Political Science podcast. My name is Heath Brown, and this week I have the chance to talk to a good friend and colleague, the author of White Working Class Voices, Multiculturalism, Community Building, and Change. The book is published by Policy Press, and the author is Harris Bader. Harris, how are you today?
I'm so pleased to be here, Heath, and talking with you.
Yeah, I read the book in the fall, and we're just now getting the chance to talk about it for the podcast, and I'm so excited to get to it. Before we get to it, why don't you share just a little bit about who you are?
Yeah, sure. So, as you say, my name's Harris Bader, visiting professor in the School of International and Public Affairs at Columbia University, and have been there teaching on comparative race and politics and global perspectives of migration for the last 3 years. And I'm also professor in community cohesion at the Centre for Trust, Peace and Social Relations at Coventry University in England. So a dual personality.
Yeah, and a broad, such an interesting research agenda, including this book that came out in 2015 by Policy Press. Your book is important for so many reasons, but it's important because it was written before Brexit and before Trumpism. And while you may not have predicted either, I think we can learn so much about the roots of each of these phenomena from your book. So that's sort of the background. I'd like to come to that in just a little bit. But before that, let's talk about the actual book that you've written. Much of this book is a meditation on the meaning of class. Mm. In the British context, what does class mean, and why is it so important to understand?
Perhaps the second part of your question is easier than the first part, either, because class is one of those issues and concepts that is so contestable and so difficult to pin down, but it's played such an important role in British cultural life. So if you go back way 100 years and looked at the way that government defined class, after the post-First World War period, it was based on your occupation. So that was at a time when people left school, went to work, stayed in the same job throughout their lives, and retired. So there's a strong stratification between upper class, middle class, working class. Now, working class were people in skilled and unskilled jobs. They're typically working in primary industries like shipbuilding, coal mining, steel, working in factories, insecure work, low paid, low skilled. And they were seen as working class. Middle class were viewed as almost like administrators and clerical staff and middle managers, not working in factories. And the upper class were typically viewed as people with inherited money and wealth who were, didn't have to work necessarily. But if they were working, they were lawyers and doctors. So people knew their sense of place in terms of class. It was occupationally based. And of course, over the last 100 years or so in the UK, it's become much more difficult to pin down what class actually means, because society has changed and the economy has changed, and class has moved and shifted from less about your occupation and economics and more about your cultural affiliation. So it's gone from some would argue, from a Marxist perspective to a Bourdieu perspective around class. And that makes it very, very messy and difficult, I think, to supply a meaning.
Now, as you're just sort of alluding to, the decline of industrial Britain, in many ways it feels like it's been dramatized more often than in the United States, even if very similar things were going on. Now, with that said, and even though you feel like maybe you've seen this story told, you know, even in the movies, I wonder if you'd describe a bit more about how the changing sociopolitical landscape over the last several decades has shifted political parties and also allegiances in Britain, including the rise of New Labour and also the UKIP party.
Well, it's terribly, terribly interesting. In the 1950s, the majority of people in the workforce in the UK were members of trade unions, and the large majority. And now it's the minority of workers are in trade unions. In the 1950s and 60s, the Labour Party was seen as a party of the working class, representing the interests of workers, of trade unionists, and advocating on their behalf. And from the last 50, 60 years, that's changed. You mentioned New Labour, and I think the interesting thing for me is that there's several things that were happening at the same time. Changes in the economy, the decline of manufacturing industry, the shedding of jobs in coal mining, in steel, in shipbuilding. But alongside that, the growing professionalization of people, more people going into college, university, as we say here in the UK, a wider set of qualifications, the role of women in the workplace. So women were seen as an essential part of the workforce. So the shifts and changes that have happened over the last 50 or 60 years has impacted on our view of our class. Now, you speak about politics, and of course, the decline of old Labour to new Labour, the move to the centre ground, the embrace, if you will, of the market, and the rejection, if you will, of the state under Tony Blair was terribly successful in terms of electoral politics. I mean, let's not forget that Tony Blair from 1997 general election won three general elections in a row and was seen as the dominant politician of his generation. So the New Labour project, to some, would be seen as being very successful, but it did it. It succeeded, some would argue, on the basis of rejecting its roots within the working class. And of course, if parties move to the centre ground, you know as well as me, it opens up a flank for other parties to come in. And I think essentially that's what's happened, is UKIP and other far-right parties have occupied the ground, or tried to occupy the ground, that the Labour Party has vacated. And they're appealing on issues on immigration, on trust, on authenticity, that Labour has found it very, very difficult to keep pace. So, in fact, far-right parties in the UK, their slogan at some elections in the immediate past is, vote for us, we're the Labour Party that your grandparents used to vote for. So I think that's a very telling phrase in terms of how politically classes become very fragmented, and people's allegiances have shifted from the 1950s to where we are now.
Now, your method here is really interesting, because this isn't just a book of political history telling. How did you do this research? And in explaining that, was it easy to collect data on the white working class?
I was motivated to do this by my own personal story of growing up in Birmingham in a multicultural, diverse inner city area in the Birmingham in England, but going to high school in a largely white, low income neighborhood that was poor. And I experienced racism for the first time as a non-white person, as a second generation son of Pakistani migrants who came to the UK. And that was a very telling period for me, because the perpetrators were white working class kids. And for a while I was very unhappy, but eventually those same kids became my friends. I was embraced with open arms by their parents, and they still remain my friends. Now, rolling that forward into my adult life and recognizing the way that white working class communities were seen as being problematic, as being having dysfunctional families, of being supporters of the far right, that wasn't my view of it and my experiences. So I wanted to do something about it. So the book was birthed by those personal motivations and supported by some very generous funding from the Joseph Rantrew Foundation initially. And I think my view of doing this research is that as research, it's challenging and difficult because people suss academics out very quickly in terms of whether they view them as being patronizing or lacking credibility. So I wanted to be myself and tell them a bit about my story in terms of affinity, but also be totally straight with them and challenge people. Got access to working class communities through working with community workers, community organizations on the ground, but spent a lot of time initially just talking informally to people. And then building their trust and then having a very robust exchange of ideas. And I think one of the wonderful things, I think, about doing this research and writing the book is the richness of the data that comes forward and the way people speak with a lot of candor about their views on a whole panoply of issues. So I think I really enjoy doing qualitative work. It's very tested and very challenging, but I think you get so much depth and so much richness of data that it's a very rewarding experience.
And what did this approach allow you to conclude about, specifically about issues of race and multiculturalism? Because this up close, the interviews and the very firsthand accounts that you're able to collect in the book, it seems allows you a different perspective on this. But where do you end up on the issues of race and multiculturalism related to the white working class?
Well, here's the thing, Heath, because I think both in the States and in the UK, our traditional view of white working class people is that they are problematic, they are racist, they reject multiculturalism, they blame multiculturalism and immigration for their current economic and social situation. And that's been received wisdom, and it's been portrayed in the newspapers, within the academic community, and also through television and radio. Now, I was always very skeptical of that because of the experiences I had growing up in Birmingham. And what we found out is that there is a bandwidth of different views within the white working class community that has not been given credence or credit for. So those views were very progressive on multiculturalism, on issues around race. People spoke personally about having diverse families, of being supporting anti-racist initiatives within the local communities. So the view that we traditionally have around white working class communities on race and multiculturalism, I think, was challenged, and I'm pleased about that, because that was certainly my view for a long time, and it's important that data bears that out. Now, am I saying that every white working class person is the most supreme anti-racist? No, I'm not saying that at all. So some of the views, and people read the book, people will say, well, how can you say that there's this bandwidth? Because people are saying using very racialized language. Now, they do use racialized language, but alongside that, there were lots of people who took a very different perspective. And so I think it's important to redress the balance. And I hopefully the book will go some way in doing that.
Now, given this more nuanced description that comes out of your research, you do this. The book came out in 2015. you did the work prior to that, I imagine in 2013 and 2014. Based on that, how did that shape your anticipation of the politics behind the Brexit vote? Did this allow you to have a the expectations of what was ultimately to come, or did this make you more skeptical of what was to come? So place this into that context.
Well, I mean, I don't want to be seen as an oracle for the Brexit vote, but I really did think several things. Firstly, I thought there was a huge disconnect between white working class communities and the political class. It was much deeper than I think many people, pollsters or academics, researchers, viewed that. So there was a depth of disconnection. Certainly white working class communities felt they weren't represented by any political, mainstream political party. And they were fed up with the continuing perilous plight, economic plight that they have, and the fragility of employment. Now, putting that forward in terms of Brexit, you have a very disconnected group of voters. You have a very unpopular political class. And you have deep mistrust in the institutions of the state. To me, it wasn't a huge surprise that people voted for Brexit on that basis. I think Brexit came, there was a perfect storm, as I've alluded to, in terms of the way people felt. And the narrative that stemmed from Brexit, and there's lots of different views of why it happened and who voted and so on and so forth. But essentially, people punished the political class and the establishment through Brexit. Many people voted against their economic interests, but politically and culturally, they took a rational choice that they were fed up with their position and they wanted to send out a clear message to their political representatives that something had to change. And of course, we're living now with the consequences of that.
Yeah, not just in the UK. Your interests have extended, and not to put you on the spot, but you have a new project that I know a little bit about, and I don't want to have you give away all of the spoil your next book, but would you give us just a little preview of how this book that's already out, White Working Class Voices, connects to the current project that you're working on?
Oh, absolutely. So this project that we started last year, it's funded by Open Society Foundation, US programs. It's called The Other America, and white working class views on belonging, change, identity, and immigration. So a five-city project interviewing 350 people across those five cities, including 225 people in focus groups. So using similar types of methodology. Now, the fascinating thing about this project, which concludes in June 2017, is that it straddles the presidential election in 2016. And again, we've completed 295 interviews out of 350. Most of those took place before the presidential election in November 2016. And again, very similar issues emerged. Disconnection, despair. People were hurting economically. They were hurting culturally in terms of the impact of immigration. But again, a wide variety of views in terms of issues around race and multiculturalism, difference and diversity. But I always said to people, I think you and I have had this conversation several times, is some of our friends in New York who very progressive, liberal. They said to me that Clinton was going to win by 10 points in the presidential election. And I kept on saying to him, well, I think it's going to be much closer than this because I've been out speaking to people on the ground, speaking to them for 1.5 hours rather than the 5 minutes that survey companies do. And I think there's a huge well of support for the type of issues that Trump was putting forward. And lo and behold, as we all know from that long night in November, that Clinton was defeated Electoral College and Trump won. And the types of issues that Trump put forward cued directly into some of the themes that the new project has uncovered. So it's been absolutely fascinating. It's been an incredible privilege doing this current project as well. Hopefully some of the data and analysis that will come out in June and in my next book, which is due to be published back in 2018, early 2019, will add to the body of work that I and lots of other very good people have generated over the last 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, well, you must promise to come back with the forthcoming book. And until then, White Working Class Voices, Multiculturalism, Community Building, and Change is available. The book is published by Policy Press. You've been hearing from Harris Bader. Harris, thank you so much for your time today.
This has been so wonderful, Heath. Thank you so much.